SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Belmont Park. A very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com. A bit of an overcast morning to start the on-site coverage toward the Belmont Stakes a week from Saturday. Justify returned to the track today at Churchill Downs. Bravazo with a one-mile workout, doing it old school. And watched that this morning on the feed from KentuckyDerby.com, which is making it that much easier to prepare for and anticipate those horses. And now that we're on site in New York, not that we can see every Belmont horse either, because plenty of them, including the Todd Pletcher pair, will do their morning work over at the training track, which is, you know, only feels like 5 miles away. And certainly if you listen to Mike Welch having to go back and forth, and Dave Grenick between the two ovals, it feels like it's further away. You got to hop in the car. But sitting here where we always do the show from underneath the overhang next to the Belmont Cafe, and a nice, you know, not a lot of activity yet other than the normal morning contingent. And, of course, Kieran McLaughlin holding court, as he always does, in the Belmont Cafe from the McLaughlin table. The K-Mac table, Ronnie Anderson, and quite a few jocks on hand doing some work. A lot of horses obviously here preparing their final efforts toward assignments during the Belmont Stakes weekend, and watching for some of those. Shug McGahey wandering in here, and Christophe Clement with the usual phalanx of horses that bear the CC insignia, and saying good morning to Shug. Here's a group of my Englehart runners coming out for their exercise. Jenny Kellner here as well, and of course Jenny out of the media department for a long, long time here in New York, and herself a top level sports writer, and famously from an era that included kind of breaking into the locker rooms in the NFL, very much so. And as Jimmy Toner comes by, where are you running? Hawkish, where? You're going to Penn National. A little bit of weather. The weather ziffy. Yeah, both. All right. Jimmy Toner, hawkish, if you're keeping track, entered yesterday in the Penn Mile, and we'll look at that group. But there is concerns that another weekend, after we got a good one in this past days ago, another ranging storm of wet weather anticipated coming into the weekend, unfortunately. So I wanted to take a chance and ask Jimmy what he was going to do between the Pennine Ridge here in New York, or the terrific card that came together at, Siaka. Yeah, who are you bringing out? Nice. I saw two go by. There he is. Go give Claude Ray the business. Unbelievable. That's why it's so much fun to come here. It's always be on track. I talked to Mike Luzzi earlier, and Luz really riding into better and better shape, and got a handful of wins for this the beginning portion of the meet here, and always rooting for him, a guy that I mean, just really inspiring in terms of coming back from pelvis fracture that would have sent many into retirement. While we're on this topic, I wanted to provide an update. Marcus Hirsch, keeping close tabs via Robin Dean, the wife of jock agent Bobby Dean, and, of course, Marlon St. Julian on Preakness night, the injury that has him in hospital, Mercy Hospital at Des Moines. This at Prairie Meadows, of course, and one of those, apparently, frankly, the same kind of scenario that that killed Jose Flores, pitched to the over the top of a horse that stumbled, and he has movement in his legs and shoulders, having some range of motion difficulties for now in his lower arms, and he's still in intensive care. So he also, being intubated, developed pneumonia, and he's now, starting to recover and make progress. But it is going to, be an extensive rehab. 2,461 wins, the career that began in 1989. So everybody rooting for Marlon St. Julian, who, funny, I was discussing it with Luzzie, and Luzzie, rode against him here and there, and said, strong, physically strong rider, and hoping for the best for Marlon St. Julian. A couple of notes as we get started. Steve Haskin is in Kentucky and should have a fun conversation with Steve starting at about 9:45 this morning as opposed to his usual 10:30. And Haskin, touring the breeding farms, it was a Calumet yesterday. He sent out all kinds of happy notes from visiting Smarty Jones. I'm looking forward to Steve visiting and talking about the trip, and he's got the Friedbergs in tow. Everything's cricket racing. Those of you that know the name, Avi and Rhoda Friedberg. And Steve will check in from Old Friends this morning. So I'm looking forward to catching up with Steve. They've got visits today, I think, I think they're going to Ashford after they stop at Old Friends. So we may hear from Silver Charm. Speaking of Triple Crown tries, Steve's going to try to get Silver Charm to say hello, at least Winnie. So we'll check in with Haskin. We'll talk to Pat Cummings, and Pat, of course, providing some follow-up to the last Group 1 of the year at Sha Tin past Saturday night and Sunday morning. So we'll talk to Pat and close out the stakes, the high weight or the high level stake calendar. Tony Black later as well, and then Tom Quigley and Rich Yang as well, and a few other visits. They're going to have after the first break, have a visit that has to pay tribute to a horseman that was very much an inside the industry name, and word spread that yesterday that Bill Graves, who spent 25 years or so with Fasig Tipton, but had extensive success and variety of responsibilities and opportunities in equine sport, not just in racing, but famous and really respected and appreciated for what he did as the yearling sales director for probably a better term for it, but Graves was the individual that would work with breeders and consigners when putting together the yearling sales, and not just yearling sales, but particularly evaluating yearlings. We've discussed this a couple of different times. This is something that Rich Migliori is doing in New York and in the Northeast for phasing. But Bill Graves was somebody who helped and advised and directed countless breeders and consigners, helping them make their decisions about, you know, what sale to place their young horse for maximum opportunity. And his understanding of the growth rates and his ability to evaluate a horse at their various stages of development, absolutely, you know, one of those nuanced qualities that, you know, I guess it can be taught, but the technical aspect can be taught, I suppose, but there's a certain innate ability to look at a horse at 18 months and understand or be able to see it at 24 months and 30 months. That's what the exercise is for anybody that is buying young horses and projecting, weanling to yearling to two-year-old in training. And Bill Graves will be greatly missed. Just a very sad day. And Boyd Browning will join us after the first break and talk about Graves and about his contributions to not just Phasic Tipton, but, you know, helping the clients and helping the people make the most of their forays into the breeding and sales arena. So our sympathies to the family, his wife Leslie and son Brian, his brother Reed Graves, and sister as well. One of those Virginia horsemen that we talk about when, you know, Deb Easter, we should probably give Deb Easter a chance too. She worked with Bill Graves, and Woodbury Payne sent me a note and asked that, you know, did I see that Bill Graves had passed? And you know, the horseman's one of those horseman's horsemen monikers applied to Bill Graves. So we'll talk to Boyd Browning. Talking about the weekend, and I mentioned Hawkish. Well, he's part of what hopefully goes off as the highlight, the $500,000 Grade II Penn Mile Saturday, early evening at Penn National. And I was exchanging notes with Stu Kirschenbaum this morning, and I asked Stu, is this the best card in recent memory or ever at Penn National? If you didn't take a look, and you may not look until, you know, tomorrow or even Saturday, it is exceptional. And I really hope the weather holds, because it would be a shame if this group of races, the, you know, the highlights, you know, being on the grass, the whether it's the Penn Mile or the Oaks and the, you know, the two turf sprints for males and females, just an exceptional card. And there's also the state bred races earlier before the features, the Oaks and the Mile. Highlights in here, Todd Pletcher entering both Colt and Mississippi, who was a good and just missed third going back to that Bridgetown at Aqueduct, the 6 furlong turf sprint. So he'll stretch back out, and that was his first race in a couple of months. And you've got Maraud as well for Pletcher, and Jeff Treadway. Therapist showed up in here for Christophe Clement, coming off the Cutler Bay win at the end of March. So he's had 60 days basically to freshen. George Weaver with a potentially dangerous New York bred way early for the Hills. Encumbered, Simon Callahan showing up, making this the 3-year-old debut for the Redham product that was last seen in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. I mentioned Hawkish for Jimmy Toner, whose only blemish, that that fourth in the Palm Beach. A couple of others, too, Mrs. Weber and Cassie, sending he's bankable, and he's shortening up, coming off of two wire job victories at Tampa in those in the Florida Cup series, as well as the English Channel win at Gulfstream. He's bankable, 6-1 to start. And Smart Remark, there's nothing wrong with Smart Remark either. And he's had a couple of tries that have been okay on grass, including a third in the Columbia at Tampa going back to March. So a terrific group of eight in the Penn Mile, and the rest of the card equally as compelling. So that one of the highlights, the Grade 1 Beholder Mile. And you want to talk about some heavyweights lining up? It's a group of six. We'll talk to Quigley later. How about Unique Bella, Val Dori, and Paradise Woods? Shoulder to shoulder to shoulder. Paradise Woods from the four hole for Mandela out of the Santa Monica. Val Dori coming out of the Adoration, and Unique Bella out of the upset in the Apple Blossom when she didn't run badly, but certainly after bobbling and kind of blowing the break, kind of rushed in a little bit and then was vulnerable late. So Unique Bella trying to snap back in this spot, and the others involved. Doug O'Neill wheeling Mopetism back out of the Gamely. I thought there was reason to believe that she could take a little bit to the turf, being an Uncle Mo, and there was some turf in there, but she ran for half a mile and then kind of retreated. So right back onto the dirt, and essentially a second off the layoff opportunity. Money Spunt and LaForce in here as well. Patty Gallagher sending out LaForce and O'Neill also with Money Spunt. So the Beholder Mile, and we'll talk to Quigley about the whole slate. It's a nice late pick four for Saturday at Santa Anita. The Snow Chief as well, the Calbreds. The Calbred group, the three-year-old boys, and there's a nice group of seven in there, led by Samantha Siegels, take the 101, probably the boss in there, coming out of the open company allowance back a couple of weeks ago. So nice weekend on tap. I mentioned the Pennine Ridge. That was drawn on Tuesday as well. The highlight there, Analyze It returns 3-for-3, and last seen, of course, winning the Transylvania in a waltz, basically. And Untamed Domain shows up in here out of the American Turf. Bill Mott, recent maiden winner for Zayat, a Declaration of War colt, Irish Territory. It was bred in Ireland. Jonathan Thomas has Catholic Boy, getting back to what he knows best, turf racing. There's a very good group. I tell you, for 200,000, this is a serious group of three-year-olds on the grass. Channel Cat for Pletcher and Calumet as well. He got on track late in that American Turf and was making up ground past tiring horses, as the note might say. The Connaught Cup as well, and you got the Aristides and at Churchill. A very nice weekend is shaping up. Let's just hope on this half of the country that it's not impacted by the weather. We'll head to the break, and I'll mention that this morning I told you Bravazo and Wayne Lucas sending Bravazo on a very measured one-mile workout. So basically one circuit of Churchill Downs and a gallop out. And you'll be able to watch it later at KentuckyDerby.com if you didn't see it live at 7:30. The Bravazo look good. I mean, he continues to look good. And it's funny, I wrote the ExpressBet Belmont Stakes wagering guide entry before I headed down here yesterday afternoon. And, you know, we had gone into the Preakness talking about Bravazo emulating Orb. And like Orb, finished a kind of hidden good sixth in the Derby. Oxbow, I said Orb. Oxbow, of course. Oxbow then wins the Preakness. And the follow-up to those two performances for Oxbow a good second in the Belmont. So can Bravazo continue on the same track? Obviously doesn't have the speed to keep up with, frankly, with Justify. And if he runs the same kind of race that he ran in Baltimore, and to some extent in Louisville, he could, if he can stay on, if he can stay on for another two furlongs. And that's the issue. We're going to talk at some point about the pedigree, obviously, when we talk to Sid next week. But one of the things I did for the wagering guide entry was to get back to the average winning distance of the sires, of the broodmare sires and the stallions involved. And there's some interesting bedfellows, to say, to coin a phrase. And there's some things that everybody needs to be aware of, including some siblings that you may need to be reminded about with some of the horses that have been on the sidelines, like Free Drop Billy. Remember that he's a half to Hawk Bill. Yeah. And the most surprising portion of the pedigree analysis work: who's arguably best bred for the mile and a half? Restoring Hope. Mm-hmm. Giant's Causeway out of the Tappan Mare. Easily the best bred for the trip. Just make note. And then there's the potential for the John Gunther Exacta in here. Justify and Vino Rosso. It might be the cherry on the sundae for John Gunther the first half of 2018 for John and Tanya Gunther to run 1-2 in the Belmont. Let's take a break. Boyd Browning is going to join us to pay tribute to Bill Graves next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, and I just heard from. I just got the greatest note from Tom Quigley. Quigley is going to be delayed till tomorrow. He's in Las Vegas. And that's all I'm going to say. But Tom is going to defer until tomorrow to discuss Santa Anita's card this weekend. So we'll make adjustments on that front. Boyd Browning joining us, and as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, the really difficult news that spread around the industry yesterday, that Bill Graves had passed after a short illness, and still taken young, and someone who is a bit of an inside baseball individual, known more behind the scenes, but absolutely somebody that helped countless breeders and consigners, and his service to Fasig Tipton really just part of his legacy as a horseman and equine sportsman. Boyd, so sorry about this news.
Well, thank you, Steve. Normally when we talk, we're getting ready to have a sale, and we're excited and enthusiastic and so forth, and it's a sad day for us. And but we're blessed with many, many, many wonderful memories, and Bill was a good man and a good friend to everyone at Fasig Tipton, and really to everyone in the thoroughbred industry, and he leaves a wonderful legacy behind in his service to the industry, and also a legacy of a wonderful son who's committed and involved in the industry 100% as well. So there is a silver lining today. The sun did come up, and but it certainly, you know, our hearts are very sad today.
Explain, and you and I have had conversations where we talk about this process, but explain what Bill did as the yearling consultant and evaluator, and then what made him so good at it.
Well, I'll probably take it in a little bit of reverse order. What made him so good at it was he had a great eye for a horse. It was instinctual. It was kind of almost like a sixth sense. But Bill was essentially the lead person in our inspection process, as we'll look through 4,000 yearlings throughout the process of the spring, 3,500 to 4,000 yearlings, evaluate them to see which ones we think are the best candidates for our selected sales in July in Saratoga and a New York bred sale, but also to give people good advice whether a horse needs more time and might be better suited for a later sale in October in the Mid-Atlantic region or in Kentucky. But Bill was, I guess in many ways he'd be like a talent scout, you know, from a professional sports association, look at young talent, would say, man, that horse will really sell well. In 6 months, it's going to be a, you know, a beautiful, well-conformed individual that's going to attract a lot of attention, has a lot of athletic ability. But Bill was, you know, as I said, he had a great eye, but also had the ability to communicate with people very, very honestly and openly, and try to give them the best advice. One of the hard things in the job is when you go to a farm, and oftentimes people view their yearlings or their horses as kind of like their children, and they have, you know, high hopes, high expectations. And John Finney used to say, nothing enhances the ownership of a horse, nothing enhances the value of a horse more than owning it. And in the world we live in today, sales placement is so critical. And Bill had the ability and the skill and the demeanor to look somebody in the eye and say, listen, you know, I think your horse is better suited, not for one of our select sales. It's better suited for a later sale, or it's better suited for this sale. And did that with, you know, with honesty and integrity, and tried to give genuine advice to the men and women who had us on their farms to look at their horses.
Maybe 5 or 6 years ago, Glennie Oakford did a Q&A with him, and I remember him noting that the process has changed, you know, is always changing, and the marketplace, it changes, and the ebbs and flows of stallion influence and you know, breeding programs, and you know, the ability to change with it is a lot of times a deciding factor for, you know, the success of farms, or, you know, for medium-sized commercial breeders, small breeders, any breeder. And his knack was uncanny, and just consistent for, what, 25 years with the organization.
Yeah, and the reason he was so good is it was his craft. He was committed to it and devoted to it and you know, looked at thousands of horses every year, you know, on our sales grounds, on farms, and throughout the country, and had the ability, you know, you know, a big part of his job and what we do is, you know, you understand certain stallions may have certain traits that a war front yearling is probably not going to have the same size and shape as an unbridled song, who was generally, you know, a big, big, long horse. War front's a little more compact. So when you're looking at, you know, a war front year, when you view it in the context of the stallion and what the marketplace expects, and Bill certainly had that expertise. You know, he also had, in many ways, you know, a mind that had been involved in the game for so many years, that he'd say, you know, well, this trait's coming through the second damn broodmare sire, and you'd kind of be scratching your head, and you'd say, I wonder if he's BSing me, and lo and behold, he'd repeat the same thing somewhere down the road, or somebody would say, you know, you are right that you know, that hind leg is typical from that line, or you know, boy, don't worry about this horse, it's a little flat in the knee, but that's okay because, you know, it's along this sire line. It's okay. People are going to be forgiving and accepting of that. It's okay. Don't worry. That's good. That's a good horse. Let's roll. And as I said, just had that instinctual ability. You know, he oftentimes we'd get in a little bit of trouble at farms because traditionally, many, many years ago, when the process kind of started, is that when Fasig would go to your farm, you would evaluate, and they'd fill out an inspection card, and we'd check, you know, these 28 boxes, and you'd check pretty good, not good, normal, slight deviation, and so forth. And Bill, after about a year, said, this is the craziest approach I've ever seen in my life. We're going to change this. It's either good, it's not good. We don't need to put a whole lot of comments on there. It's either a desirable horse or not a desirable horse. And let's don't worry about the flaws. Let's, you know, let's find the beauty in the horse. And if there's a beauty in the horse, we'll go with it. We don't worry about it if it toes out a little bit. If it's athletic, if it's strong, you know, we're going to roll. 90%, he would say that 90% of the of his decisions were made within the first 10 seconds of seeing that horse come out of the stall. The sales process is in many ways, like a beauty contest. And your first impression is so critical. You would say if a horse didn't make a positive first impression, the likelihood of it ending up on a buyer's short list was very small. And he was right.
This is one of those kinds of people that horse players and fans don't see and they don't necessarily know what goes on behind the scenes. But boy, the outpouring of respect and admiration and appreciation from every quarter as the news spread yesterday is just. It speaks volumes. I, for those that haven't seen Twitter and so forth and comment sections, usually comment sections aren't worth looking at websites. In this case, it really is because so many people wanted to let it be known how much they appreciated what he did and the contributions he made to their to their decisions and their success.
Well, exactly, and he was, he stood the test of time, and he was genuine. It wasn't always the answer you wanted, but it was always what he believed, and it was always done in the right spirit, in the right approach. Sure, he was like all the rest of us. Sometimes he'd make a mistake, and a horse would go the wrong way or wouldn't have the development that you had expected because there's a little bit of looking through the crystal ball and projecting, 6 months down the road. But, at the end of the day, he cared deeply about horses and about the people who he did business with. And, what a great statement you can say about somebody is that, he took his responsibilities seriously. He wanted to do a good job, and for Fasig Tipton and for the men and women who bought and sold horses with us.
How did he came from the show world? How did he come to Fasig's attention?
Well, he came from the show world early on, and was a tremendous rider. He was 14 years older than me, so I didn't have any background in that world. I'm not sure he was as good a writer as he claimed to be. I got to get a few chuckles in with my friends still. Bill was a very accomplished writer and was a natural. He didn't grow up with quote-unquote made horses. He grew up with regular horses, had that same knack from listening to people and talking to people. He just had that natural ability, the natural gift of being able to communicate with the horse when he was riding it or when he was looking at it on the ground. But came to Kentucky in his early 20s, was involved, showed the yearlings, worked at Saratoga for years for Eaton and so forth. Then went to work with Joe Johnson at the old Kensington, the Kentucky the training center and Kensington sales. And then Bill and Michelle had their own 2-year-old business and Pendleking business at Graves Stable. And, it was in the early 90s and Fasig Tipton had undergone a change in ownership. And I got to give Walt Robertson the credit because Walt knew Bill much better than I did then. He said, we need some new talent. And he said, I think I got the guy that can be a real asset to us. And, we met with Bill, and he came to work with us in 1992. Amazingly, continued to sell 2-year-olds, worked for Fasig Tipton on the yearling side of things and sold 2-year-olds in the marketplace for many, many years until he said, the heck with this selling these 2-year-olds. I want to work full-time at Fasig Tipton. And it's been, a great relationship for a long time.
Well, extend all the sympathies to the family and the extended family and everybody at Fasig. And Boyd, I wanted to be sure that, people that knew him and the people that didn't understood what a loss this is for the game.
No, thank you, Steve. And honestly, the one thing that Bill's greatest accomplishment was his son, Brian. Brian's obviously another respected horseman. Is has been at Gainesway Farm for a long time. Is truly a chip off the old block. Great judge of a horse. Great horse seller. Great guy to be around. And he and Bill enjoyed a wonderful relationship every step of the way. And Brian was with him, you know, to the very, very, very end. But that's what Bill was most proud of, is the horseman, and most importantly, the man that Brian is and became. So that's his main. That's his number one accomplishment. Fazy Tipton would be number two, but Brian was number one.
Boyd Browning, can't say thank you enough. And as soon as the arrangements are finalized, we'll pass them along to everybody in Lexington. And I'm sure there'll be potential to donate, et cetera, in his behalf. And Boyd, again, deep sympathies and appreciation.
Thank you. And we will be sure and let you know those details. And they should be available a little bit later today.
Boyd Browning, everybody, paying tribute to Bill Graves. Let's take a break. We're at Belmont. We'll come back. Steve Haskin is in Kentucky. We got to connect with Steve, and got opportunities here to talk to some people as well later in the morning. So stay with us. We're beginning our Belmont coverage live from Long Island, and all the appropriate preparations being made to the big plant to take 90,000 plus a week from Saturday. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com performance plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You've got an open heart, so you share what's inside, thinking that all is said in confidence, but then you realize.
We're back at the races, 15 to the top of the hour. Say thank you again to Boyd Browning under the sad backdrop of Bill Graves' passing. And I'm going to send up, I went and found that Q&A with Glennie Kane Oakford that Graves did a couple of, it was actually more like 7-8 years ago. And very insightful for those of you that are interested in this topic, and I think it was maybe I think it was back when our yearling who won the race the other day, Carlisle Bell, when she got turned down for the New York bred sale because she was too small. I think that's when I had the conversation with Boyd Browning about on the air about, you know, what goes into it. And she was a first foal, and typically first foals can be small because you know, obvious restrictive reasons as mares mature. But I didn't know much about that process until we didn't make the sale with her. And in the long run, I'm glad she got turned down because we kept her and raced her and won a week ago Thursday. We're actually in a race today, the nightcap with Just Enough Hope. Steve Haskin joining us, and Steve is on a whirlwind tour. If it's Thursday, it must be Ashford. Yesterday it was Calumet. He's escorting the Friedbergs, which is a full-time job in itself. Steve, good morning.
Good morning.
I gave you a nice flowery introduction.
Good morning from old friends. In fact, I'm standing here right now with Joan feeding Touch Gold carrots, and we just fed Silver Charm and War Emblem. And Michael is racing all the horses, and everything is just wonderful here at Old Friends.
Well, could you come across, you know, we are starting our broadcast leading toward Belmont. You couldn't find the Belmont winner among those groups?
Can you speak up a little? You're coming in very, very faint to me.
I was going to say, you got one Belmont winner, and you got one Triple Crown missed attempt. So you're two Triple Crown missed attempts. So appropriate for, you know, for us being at Belmont.
Yeah. Now, why are you there so early?
Well, I did this for American Pharoah as well. I wanted to get a couple of extra days of coverage in. Plus, we're actually running in the ninth race today, but that really wasn't part of the decision. But I did it for American Pharoah, and not only did I get there early, and I think I've done it one other time for a Triple Crown try, but I did bring my Triple Crown suit, and I will wear the same suit I wore when American Pharoah won.
Oh, really? That's very good. I'm glad you're not superstitious at all.
Well, look who's talking. You're pulling out Kabbalah. You're doing columns on Hebraic numerology.
Hey, listen, don't knock it. It worked. I tell you what, when my sister-in-law tried that on me years ago, and you asked me all my pertinent numbers, date of birth, this and that, and then put me into a chapter on the book with those numbers. I read it, and it was spooky, I'll tell you. It knew more about me than I knew. I said, oh, my God, nobody knows that. Nobody. I've never told anybody this about me. It knew things about me that nobody knows. I mean, it's just incredible how dead on this was. And from that point on, I said there was something in this. And if you saw all the coincidences during the Derby and Preakness, you know, whether it's coincidence or not, I don't know. But I noticed something about that numerology.
Hey, I've said many times, you and I have agreed, when American Pharoah drew 18, I said, "Up,
oh, oh, yes,
it's high.
Exactly.
Yes, it's yes, written that, in the stars.
That's right. You talk about in the stars, right? In the jewel stars.
That's right. Steve, since we've got the perfect backdrop regarding the Belmont, and yesterday you were at Calumet and you saw your favorite, you've been writing particularly affectionately about Smarty Jones's run and how
it, oh God, it was so great to see him.
Well, you talked last week about how it continues to be your favorite, and given all the biggest historic storylines that you covered over the years, it's kind of interesting that the Smarty season was your favorite.
Well, you know, the main reason is that he was stabled at Philadelphia Park, which was, like, unheard of. I mean, for a horse of that caliber, you know, the big Triple Crown and a national hero. And, you know, he became basically the deputy mayor of Philadelphia and the mayor of Bensalem. I mean, he became so popular there. And just the things, going to Philadelphia Park as many times as I did, and the two Saturdays between the Derby and the Preakness and the Preakness and the Belmont, where they opened the doors up for people. They opened the doors up. People were at 8 o'clock, you know, to come watch Smarty Gallop. They were lined up to the parking lot waiting at the door at 5 a.m. because we had gotten there early. And when they opened those doors, the rush of people trying to get a spot by the rail, you know, it was like a bargain basement sale at Bloomingdale's, where, you know, everybody, like Black Friday. Everybody, and guys were running with their little kids on their shoulders to try and get a spot. And then they had a big Smarty Jones merchandising table that you couldn't even get anywhere near. People were clamoring to get his souvenirs. I mean, it was unbelievable. They got 10,000 people the second time. They had to open up the second story in the box seats for people to go up there because there were so many people there. And had all these dignitaries and people cheering Smarty Jones. It was unbelievable. And then just going there in the morning and watching him train, and all the media was coming from everywhere, and they had big stands set up with bagels and Danish and fruit and everything. And it was just, and John Service was so terrific. And then, of course, there was the story I've told many times where Mike Martin and I, well, first of all, we went to the Phillies game because John Service was throwing out the first ball, and here I am out on the field with John Service warming him up, and he's throwing balls at me, and so we're standing out on the field between the dugout and first base having a catch with everybody filing in, and then John Service threw out the first pitch, and then Mike Martin and I getting to Philadelphia Park early and following Smarty on the van all the way, and the adventure we had with Mike with running out of gas, and I think I've told that story a million times, but running out of gas and Mike trying to get to Belmont in time to get a photo of him coming off the van. But, it's just amazing things. I mean, I remember these two motorcycle policemen came in who were going to take him to the border between Pennsylvania and New Jersey. And they come in with their sunglasses and their helmets on, and this one guy, I remember his name too, his name was Tim Gladdo, and you know, typical looking motorcycle patrolman takes his sunglasses off, takes his helmet off, puts on a Smarty Jones hat, and we started talking how much of a big fan he is, and then driving down the street, and the people lined up on the street going out the stable gate with their cameras and their video cameras and waving, and they closed down Street Road, which is a big road there, the traffic couldn't get through. And then they closed the toll booths up. They couldn't get through the toll booths. And all the toll booth takers were standing outside their toll booths, waving and cheering on Smarty Jones and just driving on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Big sign says, "Look out, New York, Smarty's coming." And then New Jersey patrolmen meeting them and taking them down the whole turnpike. I mean, it was just surreal, that whole Triple Crown trail. And not only that, but just covering the Derby. I happened to be in the right place at the right time. Oh, you know, just so many things were going on between the Chapmans and with Charles Sella, who put up the $5 million bonus. I was just always at the right place at the right time. And it was just, and not only that, but I became friends with Patty Hogan, the veterinarian who did the surgery on his eye, who saved his eye. They thought he was going to lose his eye. He was in such bad shape when he hit his head on the starting gate, schooling as a two-year-old. So I became friendly with her, and I just got so much story. And then I remember my friend Mark McDermott, who was the head of the Pennsylvania Thoroughbred Breeders Association. He called me up one day, and he said, by the way, I said, I know this isn't going to mean anything to you. He said, but I saw a horse yesterday break his maiden here at Philadelphia Park. He says, never seen anything like him. And he had the wrong name. What did he call him? Oh, he called him Smarty Pants. And then he said, then later on he said, no, it's not Smarty Pants, it's Smarty Jones. And he started telling me about this squirrel that hangs out in the paddock at Philadelphia Park. And he ran the roost. And Smarty Jones saw the horse, squirrel in the paddock. And he leaped up in the air and did like a 180-degree turn while in the air. And Mark said he'd never seen a horse with that kind of agility in his life. And then he went out and won by like 8 lengths or so. He says, remember the name Smarty Jones. And here's a maiden winner at Philadelphia Park, which produced a grand total of zero Kentucky Derby horses. And then, of course, it was just an unbelievable story. And I haven't seen him since this. I haven't seen him. I saw him his first year at stud when they had an open house at the Three Chimneys, and that was like 2005. So I hadn't seen him in 13 years, and I tell you, he looks fantastic. Three Chimneys never gave him a shot to be a really good stallion, never supported him, never really gave him good mares. And you know, another crazy thing, too, is that they decided to make him a shuttle stallion, and they sent him, the first year they sent him to Uruguay, to this farm in Uruguay. And when we were in Uruguay, that was the first farm we visited, and we got to know the owners really well. Who knew that in this farm in Uruguay that Smarty Jones would wind up there? He spent three years shuttling there, so that was special. And her name is Claudia Rojas, and she would email me all the time and she'd tell me how smart he was doing. So as you can see, I was very, very close to the horse. So it was so special seeing him yesterday. And now we're standing here under the beautiful breeze, blue skies, and old friends. As I'm standing to you, by the way, I got Silver Charm right to my right and Touch Gold directly to my left. You know, the two antagonists in 97. And just watching Michael, you know, interact with these horses is just incredible. And then we leave here at 10:30 and head over to see Pharaoh. So it was great. And then, of course, going to the Calumet Cemetery yesterday, which is still the most magnificent. The way it's laid out, it's just like it's hallowed ground. It really is. A big statue of Bull Lee, and in front of him are the 6 Calumet Kentucky Derby winners. And, you know, all the horses that Bull Lee sired. And then the most magnificent grave of all is Aladar's. I mean, it's under a shade tree, and it's a huge gravestone, and it's got an inscription on, you know, on the ground, on the stone. And that was really an eerie feeling. And then there's a beautiful wreath, a beautiful wreath with flowers. It was green with plants and flowers. And the shape of a horse's head placed on the grave of Our Mims. You know, of course, you have Our Mims facility. So just being at the cemetery was wonderful. And speaking of Pharaoh, we also had them take out Keen Ice, who looks magnificent. So we had to get to the other side of it. I'll tell you a horse to watch out for, by the way. He's one of the most spectacular looking horses I've ever seen. That, you know, they haven't had him long. Bala Bally, his great story. We saw him, and we saw Oxbow, and it was terrific. So still got a lot of farms to go, but right now it's just beautiful.
Speaking of Belmont, and since Calumet figures into the conversation, anybody bring up Bandua at all?
I keep looking for things about him running, but I don't. Is he supposed to come?
I haven't seen an update. I'll find out. I'll go see after the show today. I'm going to go sit down with Andrew Burns and get the stakes likelies as they stand right now. But
well, I see they mentioned Seahenge, but they don't mention Bandua.
Yeah. Well, as of when?
Well, the last time I watched the Belmont Live, they mentioned Seahenge, but no Bandua. That was Sunday, maybe.
All right. Well, I'll find out. I'll see what we can find out. I did see a little clip of him. There's like a little Twitter, like an 8-second clip of him walking to the winner's circle after his second race, and it's kind of intriguing. He's certainly. Certainly, if Dermot Weld wants to come here, you got to sit up and take notice.
Beware, Dermot Weld. Listen, I was there when he brought Go and Go, and nobody paid a lot of attention. But as I mentioned last time, Go and Go had to run in this country. He had run in the Loyal Futurity as a 2-year-old, but he came here and absolutely dusted Unbridled. I mean, he just ran off by himself. And then he came, I don't know if it was the next year or 2 years later, he came with another horse. I can't remember, was it Rare Performance or something like that? I'm trying to think of the name. You at some point check it out. He came with another horse, and everybody thought he was another Go and Go. But he didn't do much. But Dermot Weld, when he ships, watch out, he doesn't ship anybody. I think he's one of the first Europeans to win the Melbourne Cup. Maybe the first, I don't know, European-trained horse. So he's dangerous no matter where he goes. So if he, if they're coming, can you imagine with Dermot Weld and Aidan O'Brien in the Belmont Stakes trying to stop a Triple Crown winner?
It's pretty intriguing. And what's amazing is, Gronkowski, of course, too, making his first North American start. Seahenge would... was coming.
That's right.
Out
yeah,
the,
you want.
The
yeah, technically, there's three European. I tell you
exactly.
One thing. Gronkowski looked sensational working. I thought he looked terrific working in a company, and that there was a shot of him just standing on the racetrack. He's a handsome horse, big, strong horse.
No, he. It's not as if he was beating up a tomato can either. That was Engage that he was paired with. No,
yeah,
he did it
easily. I mean, I love the way he's doing it. He was down on the inside. He was in tight on the rail and did it easily and, was matching and gauge stride for stride. And like I said, did it very easily. Listen, we know that, what Justify can do against the American horses. Now, of course, Tenfold and Hofberger are obviously going to improve. So you just don't know what to expect. I mean, both those horses should love the mile and a half. So I find them extremely intriguing. But, most of the other horses he's already beaten. But these three European horses are total unknown factors in here. And we just have no idea how good they are going a mile and a half.
Yeah, agreed. And, the horse, Steve, it's funny that this comes up, and I mentioned it in the first portion of the show. I had to make my goofy decisions 10 days out for the Express Bet Belmont Stakes Treasury Guide. Yeah.
10 days? And why 10 days?
It's always 10 days. It always
okay.
Has.
All right. Yeah, all right. That's true. Yeah.
Wednesday.
Well, good luck with that.
Well, I'll tell you the horse that surprised me, and part of it was pedigree, and part of it was Baffert's reaction when I brought his name up on Tuesday. Ostensibly, Baffert was visiting to talk about Justify's fabulous return to the work tab. But I also mentioned to him Restoring Hope, having worked an hour earlier, and you could hear in Baffert's voice immediately he like leapt at the chance to talk about Restoring Hope and how impressed he was with him. And then when you look at that pedigree, Giant's Causeway, out of the Tappet mare, arguably he is best bred for the 12 furlong trip.
Well, he's the first horse. He's the first horse I backed. You one of the only horses I tweeted about. I think. Are you listening?
Yeah.
Avi and Roeder and Michael Blown and Joan are all sitting down listening on their cell phone. They're listening to the show.
Oh, that's great.
Well, let's put it this way, by the way. I've been chauffeured around since we've been here, by the way, by Avis Rent-A-Car without the S.
Avi. I love it.
Yeah, he's got, you know, he's got an SUV, and so it's been great. So between my directions and the road is GPS, we won't be getting lost anytime soon.
Well, looking forward to some of the pictures and also the recaps. And when you get all the way through, how much more? Where else are you going beside Ashford?
Well, we've got Ashford today, and then we've got Windstar this afternoon. I want to talk to a lot of people there about, like the office workers and some of the people around the farm about, you know, they have their thoughts about trying for the Triple Crown and where they watched the Derby and the Preakness from, and how to, you know, just get an excitement, an excitement feeling on the farm. So we're going to go there and see a bunch of stallions. Like I said, yesterday we went to Darby Dan, and we went to Avi and Rhoda's farm, where they have Six Mares Watershed, which is a beautiful place. I mean, I love the people. We had dinner with them last night. And tomorrow we're leaving at 5 o'clock in the morning to go see Justify at Churchill. And then on the way back, we're meeting Lenny at Lane's End to see AP Indy and all the... Avi and Rhoda have got a yearling colt by Honor Code, so we want to see Honor Code and Mineshaft and everything. So we're going to go there, and then the afternoon we're going to go see Spendthrift and go see Beholder and her baby, and Into Mischief and Malibu Moon, and you know other things that we sneak in. And then Saturday morning we leave. We got 10 o'clock to go to TaylorMade. They want to see California Chrome. And then in the afternoon, we've got Hillendale to go see Curlin and all the great stallions there. And I want to show them the stallion barn. So, and then we'll see what else we can squeeze in. Like you know, originally we weren't coming to Old Friends, but, you know, we said, you know, let's leave early. It's on the way to Ashford. So we've been here, and it's been an absolute delight. Michael's out here with his bucket of carrots. And it's just anybody who hasn't been here. I mean, it's just an amazing, amazing place. He just bought 90 more acres. I mean, I think he owns all of Georgetown now.
He's rivaling. he's becoming one of the biggest landowners in the
it's
region.
Amazing. And the thing is, right across, we don't have time to go see it, but if you come out of Old Friends and just go right across the road into Summer Wind Farm, American Pharoah's Dam is there, Little Princess Emma.
Little Princess Emma, so sure.
Wednesday's ought to get in there and see her.
Well, Steve.
So tell me your 1, 2, 3.
Justify, Vino Rosso, Free Drop Billy, Restoring Hope.
Wow, okay. Free Drop Billy. Interesting. Very interesting.
Free Drop Billy's got... Well, first of all, Dale Romans, he always finishes third in the Belmont.
Well, so the funny thing is, he said we're going to let his workout decide whether we're going to... Whether we're going to run him. You know he was going to work fast. There was no way
of course
in the world
he was going to
work for the Belmont. I mean, he was if he didn't fall down, he was going into Belmont. You know, as it turns out, he figured he was going to work 59 and change and galloped out strong. And but it'll be interesting. You know, Vino Rosso is going to love the mile and a half. And like I said, the only horse I tweeted about last year, last fall, was Restoring Hope. Was it last fall or earlier? I can't remember when he broke. When he broke the maiden. When he ran his first time and got beat in the nose, and I was like so impressed with the race he ran. I just said, watch out for this horse. And you know, he kind of actually disappointed a little bit after that. But I thought he ran. All things considered, I thought he ran a pretty good race in the Wooden Memorial, and a throw out the last race.
Well, everything could have been different for him had he been able to get into the Sunland Derby. I mean, that who knows what would have transpired. But I certainly, in part, not only the pedigree caught my attention, the fact that Baffert was so immediately enthusiastic. You if anybody didn't hear that, go to Tuesday's archives and you'll hear it in Baffert's voice. The pedigree was the clincher for me to use him.
Right. Well, the one thing when Baffert gets excited about a horse like that, and he's got a horse trying for the Triple Crown, he knows that Restoring Hope cannot be justified, but he's very confident that he could run 1-2.
I can't argue. And since I made pedigree in a lot of ways the focus of my analysis, that's one of the reasons Vino Rosso, the John and Tanya Gunther portion of this.
Can you imagine if they run 1-2? What a coup!
Well, that's absolutely the fun portion of the discussion is, you know, here's a street cry mare, and you know the Curlin. This is one of these were the three horses that, to me, you know, nobody needs me to tell them to consider Hofburg or Bravazo. That's not information I need to provide. I wanted to you know, look a little bit beyond and try to figure out who among the prices, if you are going to key off of Justify, that you need to look at. So that's why I've turned the spotlight on those three horses.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'll tell you who else I've been impressed with watching him in the mornings galloping a tenfold. He's got a beautiful, beautiful way of moving. He just looks like a real classy horse. I think his future is like Travers time. That's me. I think that's when you see the best of him. But he is improving with every start. And I told you, I spent that morning with Hofburg at Saratoga, and he is all class. But he's another one that's going to probably be peaking, you know, Travers time, maybe even Breeders' Cup Classic time. You know, these are late developing horses. But I mean, you look at them, and then you look at Justified, and you see the future of horse racing. Horses going into classics with 3 and 4 starts.
Well, yes and no. Yes and no.
Well, it's happening. You've got three of them this year. So, these horses are, if they're successful, you're going to see a lot more trainers running horses. Now, listen, if horse is ready at 2, they're going to run him at 2. But there's a lot more late-developing horses now. Look at Arrogate. Look at West Coast. I mean, look at a lot of horses each year. You're getting horses coming along late and sort of making people forget about the horses and who ran in the Triple Crown.
And let me say this, Steve, and this is maybe a conversation for the bridge between the first half of the year and the second half of the year, and it's a conversation we can have with several different kinds of pundits. But if people can't have it both ways, if they want to be concerned about that trend, well, then acknowledge the growth and the blossoming of pedigrees and stallions that are route going types, and acknowledge the transfer of the breeding industry away from speed and one turn type speed toward route going, and if you acknowledge that, well then appreciate that there may be more horses like this that can't be ready to go short in July, August, or even September of their 2-year-old year. So people can't have it both ways.
Right. And don't forget to add, you know what, you can start adding the grass horses. I know that, you know, they're never been fashionable, but you start looking at Giants Causeway, and even though Scat Daddy wasn't a grass horse, he was a grass stallion for a long time until all of a sudden, you know, after he dies, he breaks out with this incredible year on the dirt, and suddenly he's a dirt stallion. But everybody thought of, you know, it was Scat Daddy's as grass, you know, as his get, his grass horses, his best horses. So, you know, I think times are changing right now. We're seeing listen, pretty soon we may start seeing Kitten's Joys. You know, now that he's at Hillendale, maybe you'll start seeing Kitten's Joys excelling on the dirt.
It's strictly a matter of the opportunity and, you know, how much trainers and owners push in that direction before, you know, or in either direction, you know, how much of an opportunity you give them on dirt before you say, all right, they're just not a premium dirt classic prospect. Look this weekend, a Catholic boy returning to the grass on Saturday.
I know. I was a little surprised to see that. I thought that they would keep him and give him a shot to win that big race. You know, I mean, he's already won a big race, but I mean, to win a grade one on the dirt. But it's interesting because obviously they must be thinking Belmont Derby with him. But
sure.
We'll see what happens at the end of the year. I wouldn't be surprised to see them put him back on the dirt if he does well, because they might feel put him back on the grass, you know, try for a big purse in the Belmont Derby, and then go back to the turf to dirt angle maybe later on in the year for the Breeders' Cup.
When a horse bleeds, that's stress related, and
you're right. It could be
the style of dirt racing versus the turf racing is a big part of that. And I was
thinking the fact that it's at Churchill Downs, it's not at Sand either.
I understand.
You know, it's going to be colder, and chances of him bleeding are a lot less. But
that's fair. That's fair. Absolutely. Well, Steve, this trip looks like an all-timer, and
here comes a little silver charm to make his entrance.
Well, put up a couple of pictures.
If you can only see him now, he's the king.
It's so funny. Put up a couple of pictures, and I suppose
I'll be putting up plenty of pictures. Believe me.
All right, because I want to. I'll use one. I'll use one for today's listings on the show, and have a wonderful time the rest of the way. This sounds like a tremendous adventure, and I know the Friedbergs are very appreciative.
Well, it's been great. Looking forward to the rest of it.
We will see you here.
Anyway, enjoy. I'll talk to you.
I'll see you.
We'll see where we are right before the Belmont.
Well, Thursday, you'll be here, and you and Lenny and I will.
I will be there. That's right. That's right. We'll be there live and in person.
And we will do a taping of And They're Off. Absolutely. Steve Haskin, everybody. Follow the exploits in Kentucky. And I like how Steve says they're going to. They'll fit. There might be a couple other things. What other things could there to be fit in? They're going to every single farm. I don't know what else they're going to be able to fit in. Let's take a break. Got a visit coming up with Pat Cummings. Pat's been standing by for an hour as we had to adjust some schedules because Steve had to get to Ashford, and they're going to start that tour when we would normally be on with him. Tony Black to follow. And Cherie DeVoe. Cherie is going to come by with the morning activities winding down, her training career underway, and she's going to come over and sit with us for a little bit, and opening that space with Quigley. With Quigley having an ice pack on his head, he's auditioning for The Hangover Part 5. So we'll get Cherie an opportunity. I was looking forward to coming to New York and knowing that we were going to sit down. I've known Cherie DeVoe since about 2000. Yeah, that's about right. And first met her with Chuck Simon when she was Chuck's assistant. Then she made the move to go to work for Chad Brown when Chuck left Kentucky. And Cherie out on her own these last handful of weeks. And we'll talk to her about her career and her time with Chad, her time with Chuck. And, of course, she comes from a standardbred family in terms of horsemanship and herself, the exercise riding background. But I mean, fully accomplished and well-prepared for her career, hanging her own shingle, as the saying goes. So Cherie DeVoe later, and Rich Eng. Lots to do yet. And Joe Bravo was just here, and I wanted to get Joe on, but he had to go to the jocks room. And, of course, Joe, I mentioned yesterday, winning the Mike Venezia Memorial Award, which is a great honor for riders here. Let's take a break and talk to Pat. Big result. I won't, if you didn't follow Hong Kong over the weekend, I don't want to ruin the surprise. Pat Cummings, HK, when we come back.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.